Hi, I'm Taylor Smurl.
And I'm Liz June.
And this is
Neat.
It's a weekly boozecast.
It's a history lesson with a twist.
There you go. Got it right that time.
There we go. It's good.
All right. Welcome back.
Thank you.
Welcome to you.
Welcome back to you. Welcome to ourselves.
Welcome to me.
And welcome to you, listener. So we have some special announcements concerning our Patreon rewards. We've got some new tiers, and that is our Sticker Club, which is at $4 a month, and our Coaster Club, which is at $8 a month, that you also get a sticker. And you might notice that's a little different from the way that we made those levels, the way that we explained those levels before. We do have to kind of cover shipping costs and stuff like that. So if you're waiting on stuff, I know that some people actually just received their first one, because the mail is really weird.
Wow.
We kind of held off on ordering those so that we can just like send them all together. So if you are waiting on new stickers and coasters, those will be coming soon. We're really excited about them.
We're gonna send you one big package. It's gonna be playing catch up. So you'll get, if you're at the sticker level, you'll get three stickers all at once. If you get both, you'll get three coasters and three stickers. So, you know, sorry for the wait, but the good part is you get a bunch of goodies all at once.
Yes, the goodies are coming. Yes. Also, I feel like I should mention that there was a little boo-boo on my part when I created the tiers back when we were talking about having tiers. Apparently, there's this thing on Patreon that if you create tiers and you are a podcast, it automatically creates some tiers for you based on what it thinks podcasts would have.
So like preset, like,
yeah,
fill
like
in the blank.
Right. Mm-hmm. Like, oh, at the $20 level, you'll get bonus episodes and stuff like that. So if I just want to offer, if you did sign up for one of those tiers because you thought that you were going to get that stuff, we don't have it yet. We will have bonus content. It's coming. But, you know, if there's any issues, you can just message us and we will do our best to make it right. We're sorry about that confusion.
There's a learning curve here.
There's a little bit of a learning curve. And it's okay. It's okay. You know, if we got to talk about it, it's all right. Send me a message.
Yeah, we're out on our own in the Wild West of podcasting.
We're not
on a channel. We're just figuring this stuff out.
It's just us, guys.
It's just us.
It's just you and me and you folks. So we wanted to do a little bit of a change from last episode. We did like a biographical kind of thing. And so this week we wanted to talk about like a particular kind of alcohol. We haven't done one of those in a while.
Yeah, well, I thought about this in our live stream. I threw out some random Amaro facts and then realized that we've never actually talked about what Amaro is.
Yeah.
So I thought we could give you a little bit of history on that and then talk about one of the most well-known Amaros. So this is our very bitter episode for you.
Ooh, I like that. A very bitter episode.
Yes.
But we won't be bitter.
But it's a potable bitter episode.
Okay.
That's a joke that you won't understand till after this episode, which doesn't make it a very good joke.
That's okay. I think we've talked a little bit about potable and non-potable bitters.
Well,
just
I'll recover
just
that.
A little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah, I forgot already, so.
Oh, all right. So, if you've ever heard the word Amaro or, you know, had an Amaro, I think most people have a vague idea about what that means. Most people think Fernet or, you know, Montenegro, something bitter and brown. And It's actually like it's a lot more and it's a lot broader than that. Simple part of what does Amaro mean? Amaro is just bitter in Italian.
Oh, that's pretty simple.
And the constraints of what an Amaro is are really sort of just a bitter infused herbal liqueur that is made in Italy.
Oh, okay.
But even like the made in Italy part isn't like
flexible.
Yeah, because okay. there are a lot of things that are made all around the world and definitely a lot in America that call themselves Amaro, and it's not like champagne. Like somebody's going to show up at your winery and yell at you if you call your sparkling wine champagne if you're not in the Champagne region.
Oh.
Amaro is typically associated with Italian spirits, but it doesn't have to be.
They're more like guidelines.
Yes. Now, this is important to note. The word Amaro just refers to, like, a single Amaro. If you're talking about a lot of Amaro, you actually say Amari, not Amaros.
Oh. Okay, that's good to know.
Yeah, I remember early on in my career being confused about what's the difference between an Amaro and an Amari. Like, oh, it's just...
it's just more than one.
Yes.
And you have many.
That is what that means. Now... how they're made is also just as kind of loose as, like, the definition. They can be based in neutral spirit. They can be based in brandy. They can be based in wine. Really, what it's based in can be anything. So you can have something like, you know, a grain spirit distilled from wheat or from sugar beets or potatoes. So the base can be really anything. There's no legislation on specifically what it has to be made with. And then you're going to take that base, whatever it is, and you're going to infuse it with any number of ingredients. You know, roots, flowers, herbs, bark, citrus, vegetables show up sometimes. And those are going to be, like, macerated in the base spirit of choice, infused into it. And then you're typically going to finish it off with some sort of sugar syrup.
Okay. Yeah. All right.
And then... typically aged as well.
Mm-hmm.
And the end product can be anywhere from 16 to 40% alcohol.
Oh, so, that's a big range.
It's a big range. That's from very, very low, like, you know, very light liqueur levels mm-hmm. to like a foolproof spirit level. So,
oh, yeah.
So given that breadth of options, you can imagine how there's like a huge range of products that actually fall under the Amaro umbrella.
Oh, yeah. Until you said the finishing sugar part, I was like, well, this just sounds like gin could be that, but not.
Right.
It's not. It's different.
Yeah. And I mean, this is I think one of the characteristics is that there is an emphasis on bitter. Mm-hmm. There's a heavy emphasis on it. The point of it is, like, you want that bitter palate.
Okay.
So it's more heavily infused than a distilled spirit. Like, you're letting these things macerate, like, sit in the liquid for a long period of time.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas, you know, a lot of times distillation, where evaporating it with the thing kind of, like, in the chamber, but you're not adding it to the finished product.
Okay, yeah. I got it.
So it's a different method, but that's not, I mean, that's once again not a necessary rule, just generally the style that it ends up
just
in.
Guideline. That's a little Pirates of the Caribbean joke for you.
Oh, I love a good Pirates of the Caribbean joke.
I haven't seen that movie in 12 years.
So now, of course, emphasizing the bitter component and then, you know, base spirit, bitter, a little bit of sugar. You might wonder why this is different from a bitter, which is typically made in the exact same way. Like, when we're talking in, like, you know, Angostura bitter has a lot of the exact same properties as what we're talking about with Amaro.
I have a guess of why they're different, because you don't want to drink bitters.
That's pretty much it. It comes down to the design. It's the,
okay.
It's the level of infusion you're doing, the level of dilution, and then probably also the amount of sugar that you're adding to make it go into that potable category. That's the main thing that separates bitters from Amari, is that Amaris are designed to be potable. They're designed to be something you can sip on, you can drink.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas bitters are designed to be non-potable. You just add a few dashes to something. They're mm-hmm. meant as seasoning, more or less. And that's how they get around the issue of being able to be sold in the grocery store.
Gotcha. Because you wouldn't want to take a shot of that stuff.
Yeah, I mean, nowadays people do.
Really?
I think people probably always have, but it's become more fashionable to just pop off the doser top on your bitters and just have a lot.
Wow.
That, I mean, you know, we'll get into it as I go through, like, some things that do fall into this category. It's actually a bit of a blurry line even with that, like, what separates those, what makes the unpotable bitters and the potable bitters all that different. There's not much.
Okay.
But, you know, in practice, they're used differently.
All right.
Now, Why were they made?
Why?
Why? Well, the idea of Amari, they trace back to, like, the ancient Romans.
They're always drinking.
Yeah, and they also like to eat a lot, too.
Yes, they do.
Yes. So they would infuse their wine with a lot of herbs that were thought to aid digestion.
Oh, yeah.
And then they would drink that wine after a heavy meal to kind of help settle their stomach and help everything, you know, go down. And that same idea stayed in Italian culture. It's up to, like, the 1800s, you know, distillation has become more the norm. So whereas the Romans based it in wine, it becomes more the style to base it in grain spirits. This is the same time period where you've got, like, you know, chartreuse being made by monks, and same in Italy, you've got monks making Amari, but you've also got Amaris being made by the pharmacists. So the idea is, like, you know, they're making it for the medicinal purposes. It's designed around, like, being a health tonic.
Yeah.
Purported to fix everything from indigestion to, you know, aches and pains to diseases. Most of those things it will not.
Yes. No. Yeah. Maybe help your tummy a little bit.
Yeah. But that's what the flavor profile of Amari was never meant. It was never really designed around, let's make something super delicious. It was more designed around, if you look at the most occurring herbs and roots that show up in Amaris, you've got, like, gentian, which is, like, a bitter root that's supposed to stimulate the liver.
Oh.
Yeah. You've got, like, wormwood. Which we talked about, like, the supposed health benefits of
wormwood.
You also see cinchona, which is where we get quinine.
Which is, like, medicinal-ish? Well, or thought to be medicinal.
That's the thing that makes tonic bitter.
Okay.
And the whole idea behind that is, like, it was, you know, used for as an anti-malarial.
Right.
And in high enough quantities, it does have anti-malarial properties. Now, are you going to get enough in a gin and tonic or enough in a little shot of Amari? No.
Probably not.
Probably not.
Yeah.
You
see, like, micro-dosing.
Yeah.
But not really.
Yeah. But, you know, it's in there. Angelica root, myrrh, green cardamom, sarsaparilla, like, all of these things were put in there, not for their flavor components. So they are delicious elements, but it's more because of, like, the ideas around them were all, they help digestion, they help detoxification.
Okay.
They help, like, you know, promote your salivary glands. Now, I will say on the idea of, is there any actual medical benefit to these, it's not completely useless.
Oh, okay.
It will not cure your plague or your aches and pains.
Oh. Man.
I know. That would be great, right?
That'd be awesome.
Just, if that came out, like, you know how we can fix Corona? Just have a nice glass of Averna. Just some nice Montenegro. No.
If only.
But there is this. I should have mentioned this term earlier, but, you know, we talk about Amaro as being a digestif.
Yeah.
And that's in the sense that we're talking about it, using as a digestive measure. That's simply, if you've ever heard that term or seen it on a restaurant menu, that's all that means. A digestif is just something that's supposed to help you digest.
That's, like, the category of, like, after dinner drinks.
Yeah.
Okay.
And I will say a lot of things that end up on those menus will not settle your tum-tum. Like
port?
Yeah, port, that you know, nutty Irishman coffee, whiskey, like, a lot of things that have
Those are just dessert.
Yeah, that's just dessert in a glass, which is fine. But if you're looking for something that actually might help in your digestion, Amaro is actually a pretty good way to go.
Okay.
The alcohol in it will get the stomach going. It aids the production of pepsin and increases secretions of the pancreas and the gallbladder. And a lot of those herbs that I mentioned, they do actually stimulate the salivary glands and, like, bile. So they do start helping, like, the production of digestion.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah.
So okay.
There's a slight truth to the idea that it could help settle your stomach after a heavy meal.
You know, if you're really in trouble, go to the doctor, but, you know.
Yeah. No amount of Amaro will stop you from getting malaria.
Yeah.
I didn't say that.
We shouldn't have to say that, but we said it.
I don't know, you know. I also feel like just being related to, like,
Dr. Sydney McElroy?
Yes. Mm-hmm. I have to go out of my way to, like, because there were a lot of articles in reading this and, like, you know, that are from, like, the liquor salesman standpoint of, like, and it is, you know, a curative for your digestive needs. I'm like, I have to make sure that that's super duper true before I say
it. Surprising health benefits.
Yeah.
Right. Very surprising, meaning not real.
No, not at all. So I do want to, like, because this is something that confused me for a while. So I do want to try to lay this out as best I can, because that term digestif is usually found paired with the term aperitif.
Right. One's for before and one's for after.
And that's and it really is just usage. Aperitif as something that's consumed before a meal, meant to sort of stimulate your senses, open up your palate, you know, open up your taste buds. And that association of amaro as digestif starts to fall apart when you look at the usage, because some things that qualify as amaros are used as aperitifs, like lighter style amaros, like Campari and Aperol.
Right.
Fall into this category. They're Italian, they're bitter, but we don't tend to think about them as the same thing as a Fernet or a Ramazzotti or something, like, because they're just so different in the glass.
Right.
But they do fall, technically they're all the same thing. But Campari and soda is like a classic aperitif.
Right, right.
So
that's interesting, because when you were talking about the Romans, I had this thought of, like, well, one of the things that I think about when you think about, like, ancient Roman consumption is, like, well, we're going to have something to, like, settle the stomach afterwards so that we can get ready to eat again. So when you get into that kind of mindset, it's like, an aperitif and a digestif could be very interchangeable.
You know, the idea that either of these would have actual use, they both rely on the same principle. And it's really that a lot of those bittering agents do activate your salivary glands.
Okay.
So it's just more like having a little bit of it before a meal will wake up your palate, but it won't blow it out. Mm. And then having a lot more, something that's more concentrated at the end of the meal will blow out your palate, as the, like, an amaro will blow out your palate.
Yeah.
Like, you know, that's it. You're done. You're not going to taste the nuances of your, you know, your, like, light halibut sashimi dish or whatever. But you know, so it's really, they're relying on the same principle, just it's more the quantity of bitterness.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool.
So they're very related, and there's no strict term as to what, like, a lot of things, once again, will end up on those menus that are, say they're aperitifs, say they're digestifs. They're not going to be any good for waking up your palate or aiding your digestion. The only real factual evidence that any of this works for that is in the bitter qualities of them and in the quantity of bitterness available.
Mm.
If that makes sense.
Yeah.
And cut that down to where it does.
No. This is making sense. I'm learning a lot.
So now, as I've made clear, there's a lot of things. There's a lot of different ways these can be made, which can be very overwhelming. So luckily, there are, like, smaller categories within the term amaro that kind of helps you break down. And, like, if you're looking, you know, if you're looking for an amaro, that can mean so many different things. So to kind of understand what qualities you might want to try, and here's some of the, like, the common categories. And there are a lot more that I'm going to tell you, but these are some that, like, relate to more popular amaros out there.
Okay.
So light is just a category. Light amaros, they're lighter in color. They have a lot of citrusy notes. That's where, like, Amaro Nonino, which we put in that paper plane we made on the live stream.
Oh, right.
Yeah. This is also where you'd probably put Aperol or even Campari. They're lighter. They're very heavy on the citrus notes. The bitter is kind of the end note. Medium, they're more like moderate in alcohol, like 32%. They do a good job of balancing, like, bittersweet and citrus. This is where, like, Montenegro, Averna, Maletti would probably fall here. So they have those nice kind of roasty, chocolatey notes. They have some spice, but they're not going to be that big, like, bitter kick to the face that we associate with something like Fernet, which is actually a category of Amaro.
Oh, yeah.
So while we all know, like, the famous brand Fernet Branca, Fernet is just a category within Amaro. It's a lot more bitter. It's a lot sharper. It has a really strong, like, saffron, chamomile, mint sometimes even, but definitely is, like, more of the aggressive. The way we think of, like, a very aggressive Amaro, that's typically a Fernet style.
Okay.
There's Alpine Amaros. They originate from the Alps, but they're very, like, bright and herbal. Amaro Alpino is kind of the well-known from that. There can be a Vermouth Amaros. So these are those wine-based Amaros.
Okay.
Those are like the super light ones. Those are like the 16 to 18% ABV. They have very light bitterness. They can be white, rosé, or red. Amaro.
So yeah.
Even more confusing. Amaro.
Amaretto.
They're all different. Amaretto. Yeah. All different things.
Yeah.
Well, no. One is the same thing. Plural. But yeah. Amaro is a wine-based Amaro.
Okay. Ooh. Amaro.
Yes.
Damn.
Yeah. Right?
Okay. Are they spelled differently?
Amaro and Amaro?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's Amaro is A-M-E-R and Amaro is A-M-A-R.
Okay. Oh. All right.
There's a Carciofo, which is a weird word, but you'll know it by the only brand I've ever seen out there that is what it is. It's Amaro made with artichokes.
Chinar?
Yes. Yeah.
Is that how you say it?
Chinar, yeah.
Oh, good. Yeah. Yes,
so
got it.
Chinar represents an entire category of Amaro. Tartufo is an Amaro that's specifically made with black truffles.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Quina is a style of Amaro specifically that focuses on that quincona bark. It's like the brand Quina Martini is sort of the one that's out there that I've seen.
Okay.
And then there's Rebobaro. This is what Zucca, which is actually a fairly well-known Amaro, but that's what this is, the style this is made in. And it's heavy on like that Chinese rhubarb, which is not like our pie rhubarb.
Right.
It's a very bitter rhubarb.
Okay. Yeah.
And I mean, it extends from there. There are honey Amaros and there are all just different. There's a lot of Amari. It's a huge category. And I would say if you've tried, this is more than anything just to exemplify, if you've tried one and it wasn't your thing, check out what category that one was in and then try literally anything else in a different category, because it's a whole wide world of spirits that all can be used. You know, they can't be used interchangeably in drinks either, because they really, like, they're so different, so unique. Yeah.
Yeah. Nice.
So, as I mentioned, Amaro it's associated with Italy. Things that are called Amaro can be made outside of Italy. And then a lot of other cultures at the same time, they had the same idea, you know, around the world, all throughout Europe and around the world. We understood that herbal bitter liqueurs were supposedly good for your health. So you have like similar styled liquors being made in France, in Germany. If you've heard of like Amerpicon.
Okay.
That's a French Amaro, more or less. It's well known.
Is it made with pecans?
No.
Oh man, that sounds good.
there is a nut based style of Amaro called like Nocciole or something.
Ooh.
Yeah, there is one. Oh well, this is I think something that I always like to, anybody that gets like high on their horse because they love Amaro, I always bring up my favorite frat boy, Jägermeister.
Oh, I knew that was going to come up.
Yes, Jägermeister is, in Germany, they would probably call it a schnapps.
Uh-huh.
But as far as what's in the bottle, it is it's made exactly the same as your like medium to bitter style Amaros.
Oh, yeah.
You can use it interchangeably with those styles of Amaro. So I don't know why it gets such a bad rap, but then it's super cool and trendy to know about Amaro.
Yeah, I think the usage might have a lot to do with that.
Yeah.
Yeah, the frat boys.
Yeah. Yeah. That's absolutely true. But Jaeger checks all of the Amari boxes, and it's made in almost an identical way. It's quality. Like,
yeah.
It's just as quality as any other mass-produced Amaro, so.
Okay. Are you trying to hint that I should give Jaeger another chance?
Look, I love Jaeger. The thing that opened my eyes to Jaeger is I worked a Jaeger holiday party where we had to mix, all the cocktails had Jaeger in them, and I was like, what is this? And the cocktails were all very good.
Okay.
Yeah.
They made you a believer.
I know. It works. I mean, literally, you could make that hanky-panky we made on the live stream, which if you did not join us, that is equal parts like 1.5 ounce gin, 1.5 ounce sweet vermouth, and then like a couple dashes of Fernet. You could sub in the Jaeger for the Fernet and you'd get something that maybe would be a little sweeter, but it would work just as well.
Okay. Good to know.
You know, and something else that falls into this category that we've talked about before is Malort.
Oh, shit. Malort
would be classified as an Amaro.
What's in Malort?
It is an herbal infusion, a bitter liqueur.
Okay. Well, that checks.
Yeah.
It's
heavy on like the, you know, the anise and like fennel notes, but it is at base. And that's one of those, when I was talking earlier about like the difference between potable and non-potable. I mean, that skirts the line on potability, but it falls into this category. And, you know, really opposite end of the spectrum, I know I don't think I've talked about Becherovka on this podcast, but I know you have had to put up with me talking about Becherovka a lot because I really love it.
I like it.
Becherovka is from the Czech Republic. It's like a really light, it tastes like Christmas. It's like really mm-hmm. cinnamony and like star anise, and it's just really light and beautiful, but also an Amaro. Just, you know, made elsewhere. So, yeah. So, there's Amaros around the world. They might not be called Amaro, but it's the same exact thing made with the same sort of mindset behind it. And just as many, just a wide variety of flavors to be discovered.
Wow. What a rich, bitter world we have.
Yeah. I love Amaros.
Yeah. Do you want to talk about our favorite Amaro, or maybe everyone's favorite Amaro?
It's definitely the Amaro that we all know.
Yes. Okay. That's fair. That's fair. So we're going to talk a little bit about Fernet Branca, to be specific. I have my conjectures because there are differing stories on how it became named Fernet Branca. The one that seems to be the most credible is that there was a Italian doctor, Dr. Fernet, who made this.
I'm sure it's credible, but I love that it's like, well, it was Dr. Fernet.
Dr. Fernet.
Dr. Pepper.
Yeah. Made some, you know, except for he had 50 ingredients.
Oh, wow.
And that was in 1842. Now, I will say there is, according to Eduardo Branca, who is the current managing director in the U.S., said that there was a couple stories, one of which was that there was a Swedish chemist named Fernet. This is a little speculation on my part. Maybe that was like a story that they like used to kind of say that's like different from this Dr. Fernet, who's an Italian doctor, because they also say, well, there's no record of this Swedish chemist. But then there's also a story that the workers that worked in the distillery in the Fratelli Branca company, later there was a distillery. I'm jumping ahead a little bit to tell this part of the story, but the workers claimed that Fernet means in the local Milanese dialect, because it is from Milan, it approximately means cleaned by iron, which has to do with like the hot infusion process, because it was originally mixed with a hot iron poker.
Oh.
So very different stories on like what came first and like why. Since 1842 predates the creation of Fernet Branca, I would want to go with that as the real story, but okay.
So it was again, just maybe an effort for the Fernet Branca company to distance itself from the idea that it might have taken the idea from somebody else.
Yes, I think that that's fair to say, okay. Because Fernet Branca was formulated in Milan in 1845, which is just 3 years later than this Italian doctor named Fernet having very much like it's 50 herbs in his concoction. So like you have to assume that that is definitely an Amaro.
Yeah.
So 1845, a self-taught herbalist named Bernardino Branca, he was considered kind of an alchemist, and he made this potion. It was an Amaro. It's a herbal liqueur. It's typically served as a digestif or an after-dinner drink. We know what that is now. So Branca made this potion, right? And there was a priest called Father Napi who ran the local hospital, and Napi decreed that this potion was a cure for stomach ache and nervous disorders as well as cholera. And this is interesting because like, although I there's no part in my mind that's like that would cure your cholera, they did give it to patients in cholera wards as a way to encourage them to eat and drink. Okay. So it was more like used as really what a digestif or an aperitif is. Like you said, it encourages your salivatory gland. Is that right? Salivatory?
No, I just said it, but now I...
No, now I said the wrong word.
Salivatory.
So it does encourage your salivatory glands.
Also probably like chills you out a little bit, so you're not just like, I have cholera,
Right, no, that's a good idea. That's a good point. Now, there was a rumor at one point, speaking of chill, there was a rumor at one point that it contained opiates.
Ooh.
And I should be clear that the family denies claims that the U.S. made them take the opiates out to be sold in the States. The Fratelli Branca company said that it never contained opiates and that they've never changed their recipe. But if it had been opiates in it, although it's still not a cure for cholera, it might have helped ease the pain.
Is that why we put Fernet and Coke together? Because I know, like, old school Coca-Cola used to have
cocaine. Yes, absolutely.
We were just trying to recreate the magic.
No, I think that, like, and there's a lot of comparisons made between, like, the recipe of Coca-Cola and the recipe of Fernet Branca. Not because they're the same, but just like the secrecy involved mm-hmm. in them. Fernet Branca has been produced according to the original recipe, like all this time that's just been handed down from generation to generation. So currently only the president of the company, Niccolo Branca, knows the proper proportions of each and every one of the 27 different herbs and other ingredients. And it's been said that Niccolo personally measures out the aromatics during the production process.
You know, this, I used to wonder, like, because I know that people have been able to pin down the ingredients in a lot of these super secret recipes. Like, well, if you can figure out the ingredients, how hard can it be to recreate? And then I, like, have, since I've tried to make my own bitters.
Yeah.
Like, you just learn, like, wow, like, using, like, 8, you know, cardamom pods or, like, 5 makes just a massive difference.
Yeah.
Like, the proportions on these things, especially when you're dealing with these highly bitter agents, it's like... Yeah, you gotta have, like,
right.
exact amounts.
Yeah.
You go really wrong really fast.
You could go really wrong with 27 ingredients, really.
Absolutely.
But some of the herbs that we do know to be included in the recipe are aloe ferrix, which is, like, bitter aloe, gentian, which you mentioned, a lot of these we've mentioned, chamomile, myrrh, quinine, angelica, peppermint, cardamom, Chinese rhubarb, and saffron, which, fun fact... Fernet uses a whopping 75% of the global supply of saffron.
Oh my
which
gosh.
Which saffron can be up to $5,000 a pound.
Yeah.
It's like, it's very easily the world's most expensive herb, and Fernet uses 75% of the world's saffron.
Jeez, save some for the rest of us,
right?
Fernet.
We're all, you know, like when you have a recipe that calls for saffron, you're going to Whole Foods and getting that little vial and just like using a couple like
a
little
thread,
like yes. but Fernet uses the rest of it.
Wow, that's funny because I've had sometimes we joke about the ingredients that you can never put in cocktails because it's just not. There's no way to make money if you have that ingredient in there.
No.
And saffron is one of those. But yeah. I guess if you put Fernet in your cocktail, then there you go.
You've got 75% of the world's saffron in there.
Can you list it on your menu as an ingredient and just be real sappy about it? Like, there is saffron in there.
No.
To make it look a little bit impressive? Don't do that. That's not ethical.
No.
But you could do it.
You could. I mean, technically. Fernet is a little on the higher side of ABV. It's 39%, and it is like a lower sugar content than most Amari, and it is one of the few Amari to be aged in a barrel for a full year. Nice. So it's aged a little bit more. It's in a barrel. Cute. We love barrels. The taste is pretty medicinal. You might get like a little black licorice on the nose, perhaps similar to a shot of Jaeger.
Yeah.
Some cool history. So Bernardino's son, Stefano, took over the business from his dad. But when Stefano died, his wife, Maria Scala Branca, took over the business and became one of the first female entrepreneurs in Europe.
Oh.
Yeah. And then from that. Yeah, it's cool. It's pretty cool. She was running shit for a while.
Good for her.
Yeah. And then her son, Dino, took over when she stepped down. The brand started gaining popularity, and that led to the founding of the Fratelli Branca Distillery and Fratelli Branca as a company. So they invested a lot in advertising campaigns, including like creations of calendars with artworks from famous artists. And this was around 1886, which is the start of the Art Nouveau movement.
Oh, I would say Fernet is some of the best. Like,
yeah.
Imagery, art, like ads.
Right. No, they have. I was looking at one that was like, it was like a lady in a dress that was just made of Fernet Branca bottles.
Oh, wow.
It was really cool. They have some really cool art. I don't know. I feel like this must be an Italian thing, like how, like, Campari did.
Yeah, that's true. They, like, really, like, art and liquor working together.
Like, they go hard. Like, the poster art game is really strong. And into the 19th century, they've continued to be known for this style of art-driven advertising. They have the famous Eagle and Globe logo that was designed in 1893. That's, like, one of the things that they're really known for now still is, like, you know, they have those coins that, like, have different designs on them. They're really cool. They've kept it up. That's part of their thing.
And there's so many bartenders that have that globe and eagle tattoo.
Yes. Oh, my God.
It's like being a literary major and having, like, the Vonnegut tombstone. Like, the everything is beautiful and nothing hurt. Like,
oh, that's, my God.
It's the bartender equivalent.
That's so funny.
To be fair, I think both tattoos are cool.
Yeah. I mean, they're cool. They're cool. Tattoos are cool. So in 1907, Fratelli Branca began exporting their Fernet to Argentina. And Argentina is responsible for the popularity of Fernet Branca and Coca-Cola.
Oh.
Which is a cocktail called the Fernando.
People call, oh my, that's what Fernet and Coke is called?
Yeah, that's what they call
it. If somebody ordered a Fernando for me, I would not know to make that.
Well, I bet in Argentina they do.
That's cool.
Apparently in Argentina they drink a kind of bitter tea, so they already had a profile in their, like, day-to-day life, and they were much more responsive to something bitter like that. So it was super popular in Argentina. Eventually it became so popular there that Fratelli Branca established a distillery in Buenos Aires in 1925. At the same time, according to Eduardo Branca, who is Dino's great-grandson, Fernet gained popularity in the United States during Prohibition because it could be sold as medicine. Yeah, getting there under the radar. To which he said, "My great-grandfather cried for a couple days after Prohibition ended. He may have been the only one in the world so upset about this."
I'm sorry, Grandpa.
Oh, he's okay. He's fine. Don't worry about him.
Okay. Nice old Fernet guy crying. I don't want to think about that.
Aw. Well, they did have a second product that I'm sure you're familiar with, Branca Menta, which was conceived in the 1960s. And supposedly it was inspired by Maria Callas, who is a Greek-American soprano, who was spotted drinking Fernet Branca with ice, sugar, and mint before performing at La Scala. So they got the idea, hey, she likes mint. Let's make it super minty and call it Branca Menta.
Branca Menta is, like, so delicious. I mean, I like Fernet. I will drink it, but Branca Menta is like dessert.
Yeah.
It's just like a delicious chocolate candy cane in your mouth. Mm.
I think that's the kind of that I've actually had.
Yeah?
Yeah. I was working at a bar, and one of the other servers went to the, like, it was the end of the night. One of the other servers went to the bartender and was like, let's have Fernet. And she asked me if I wanted some, and they actually had Branca Menta, and that's what I had for the first time. Now, this gets us right into the elephant in this room, the bartender's handshake.
Ah, yes. International.
Yes. So, a little history. In the early 2000s, which is pretty recent, yeah, it's in like the last 20 years, Fernet Branca began to surge in the U.S. starting in San Francisco. And those behind the bar on the West Coast began sipping Fernet Branca as sort of a badge of honor. So this may have been originated by bartenders in the city's North Beach neighborhood, which is an area that's pretty rich with Italian heritage. And so then from there, they introduced Fernet Branca to other bartenders in the city, and then it spread to bartenders in Los Angeles, New York, Las Vegas, other major cities quickly adopted it. And it became like an after shift ritual that you would have a Fernet Branca or two, either as a shot or mixed with ginger beer. Hmm. They started calling it the bartender's handshake because it was like a signal that you're in the club. You're in like the extended family of bar service folks.
When I was in Japan, this was my second trip. It was a while ago. It was maybe like 5 or 6 years ago. And I was at a bar, Trench, which is a really nice cocktail bar in Tokyo. as I went to leave. And you do not, like, shots aren't, you can get shots in Japan, but it's not really as part of their culture to, like, it's not as much as a thing as it is in ours. And I talked a little bit to the bartender. We talked about bartending, like, he knew that I worked in New York. So before I left, he offered me a shot of Fernet, and he said, a handshake.
Oh, that's adorable.
Like, I love that it got that. Like, I mean, it's worldwide. Like, you know, he knew, like, that's this is awesome. Hospitality for you. Yeah.
Yeah.
That was very cool.
Right. Well, so, you know, like, another option is you can, like, it said that the real pros carry one of those coins in their pocket. And what part of it is that, like, if you're asked to produce it and you don't have one, then you have to buy the round, which I'd never heard. I don't know how you get a coin, but they're out there.
I've seen the coins.
I don't know if you trade them or, like, if you just... I feel like it's something that you have to earn and you can't, like, buy it. But maybe you can... I mean, I'm sure you can buy it, though. Yeah. I would imagine there's a lot of people who just, like, get it, see one and, like, buy it or, like, get it. And then it's just like, oh, yeah, I've got this coin. Like, you just bought that. I don't know. That's speculation. I don't know how you get it, but you can get it.
I feel like I should know. Like, I've known people that have them, but I just...
If you have a Fernet coin, let us know and tell us how you got it. Yeah, can you get us one?
Yeah, for as much like of like events that we've worked with Fernet, that there's been so much swag around, I've never seen a coin. Like, it's definitely not something they just give away.
That's so weird.
Guess you gotta earn them.
Yeah. Well, speaking of events... So, Fratelli Branca is very aware of and excited about their relationship with the bartending community. So, in 2007, they held the first Fernet Branca Barback Games in San Francisco, which includes activities like carrying crates of bottles and dragging barrels of Fernet through, like, tire obstacle courses and, like, you have to, like, carry... like, as many bottles as you can, or you have to carry glassware without breaking it, or you have to make cocktails blindfolded. Since its conception, the annual games have spread to LA, New York, Chicago, Boston, San Diego, and the UK. I would assume that they're not doing it this year.
No. I've gone to the Barback Olympics here in New York, and for a very long time at a previous job, one of my bosses tried to get me to do the Barback Olympics. Yeah. I refuse, because it looks like... The thing is, like, that all sounds very difficult, and you're drinking Fernet the whole time.
Yeah.
So you're not just running through obstacles carrying, like, glass bottles. You're running through obstacles carrying glass bottles, and you're a little bit drunk.
Yeah. It's just,
I don't do well walking upright, like, sober. So
I don't like the tire runs. Yeah, I've never been into that. I don't know.
Also, like, a barback's life is already just pain. Like, a barback's job is to suffer. Why would you then make them do an event? I think there's charity involved, so it's a good thing.
But, yeah, you know. And you can, like, proceed to the finals and like go to Europe for the finals and
stuff.
That's cool. Like,
that's cool.
Yeah. It sounds, I don't know, it sounds fun, I guess. I don't know.
I'll do a Zoom barback game.
Oh, yeah.
They'll figure that out.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I tried to look and see what was going on with it, and I just can't find any info, so I'm assuming that it's just, like, canceled or postponed or something. There have been, and maybe in the future there will be again.
Yeah.
They exist, folks.
Check it out. I don't know. If you want to watch some barbacks suffer, you could just go to any bar.
That's
just
true.
Literally any bar.
That's true. I mean, you can't now.
Just look for the people that are working 50 times harder than the bartender. And that's...
Yep.
That's the barback.
That's the barback. Good old barbacks. Yeah.
Well, all right. So there we go. So
that's some fun.
Some Amaro facts and some Fernet facts for you.
Yeah. I know we made the Hanky Panky, which is one of the big Fernet cocktails, but I'm sure we can make something else. There's tons of stuff.
There are. There's actually... We'll have some fun over on the live stream. If you're listening to this, I think it's tonight.
Yes. I'm going to say it's tonight.
Saturday, the 18th of July.
So yeah.
If you're listening in the future, you missed it, but that's all right.
You can go on YouTube. It's still there.
Yeah. I've worked with, like, store-bought cola syrup before, which isn't that great, but I want to do something with boiled down like Coca-Cola syrup.
Oh, yeah.
Like make like a, try to make a Fernet and Coke Redux or something.
Okay.
So we'll get weird. I feel like getting weird.
Let's get weird. So, let's get really weird. Yeah, I was wondering if you were going to do the Coca-Cola and Fernet.
Yeah, just like putting Fernet and Coke in a glass. I don't think you need to see us do that.
You can do it if you want.
You absolutely can. It's tasty. I think we can play around with that idea.
We'll just elevate it a little bit.
Yeah.
Do like
or fuck it up. I don't know.
Deconstructed, reconstructed.
Oh no.
Fernando. Yeah. Cool.
We'll name it after a different Lady Gaga song.
Yes, Alejandro.
There we go. We already have our concept, y'all. We're ready to go.
Yes. I'm so behind this.
All right.
Awesome.
Well, cool.
Yeah. Well, thank you to Absurdist for our theme music, and thanks to everybody listening out there. Thanks to everybody who's joined our Patreon. Like we mentioned before, there are new tiers, and there's going to be new stickers and coasters. So get on that, because it's going to be fun, and it might take a while to come in the mail, but it will come, and if it doesn't come, just message us.
We'll send you another one.
Yeah.
Thank you all for being understanding as we figure out how to navigate the Patreon.
Yeah, you know.
Nothing that big, just Patreon. We're just figuring it out. Yeah, sorry.
We're just figuring it out. You know, it seems simple, but sometimes it's hard. So thanks
sometimes
for your patience.
Things are hard. all right. Well, hey, I've been Taylor Smurl.
And I've been Liz June.
And this has been
Neat.
Yay!